so weird you're here to break down. What is happening, PGA DFS fans, as we got a little classical vibes to bring us into the Byron Nelson Championship week. It is going to be a good week. I know that we may have a little bit on the background with the PGA Championship next week, but still plenty of money to be made this week, of course, throughout. And we've got plenty of different options to choose from when we're talking about our DFS contest, of course. And be remiss if I didn't bring up our sponsor for our show, Monkey Knife Fight. Thank you so much for the continued support and, of course, the continued support of all of our fans out there. Let me tell you guys just quickly about what Monkey Knife Fight has going on. What they've got going on is player props-based contests. They're easy to play. They don't require the time commitment that other DFS sites do in order to be competitive. With Monkey Knife Fight, you are in charge. If you want to play NBA, UFC, PGA, esports, soccer, how about NFL, Ben? They've got that coming up, too, pretty soon. And, of course, use promo code AWESOMO and you're going to get $100 first match deposit, up to $100, I should say. So check on Monkey Knife Fight over at monkeyknifefight.com. And Ben, last week, we talked about 5.5 Eagles are better as the prop. And you and I both said Bubba Watson was the guy they had to have in the lineup. Well, guess what? He had two Eagles last week. Sadly, you would have had to gotten to JT Pawson and Charles Schwartzel to beat that prop. So I've got another one this week, which will kind of lead us into talking a little bit about the golf course. The birdie or better percentage. You and I have talked about this a lot. The birdie or better line is set at 19.5 by this week over at Monkey Knife Fight. Got plenty of players to choose from there. Daniel Berger, Jordan Spieth, and the like. So I'm going to kind of ask you the first question of the week. Does 19.5 birdies seem like a low line to you?
So it does. Now, we don't ultimately know, and we're going to talk about this a lot. We have not seen this course in tournament play. But from what I think we are all gathering, you're going to be making some birdies. There's no doubt about it. The par fives are extremely gettable. There's some par fours that are extremely gettable. Maybe there's some mistakes out there, but I would be stunned if the top end players, particularly on the first page of the leaderboard, all came within this number and went over it, honestly.
Agreed. So really what you're betting there, or what you're going with as your guesstimate, is that they're going to make the cut. Long as our golfer makes the cut, they should eclipse that 19.5 birdie mark. But of course, if you think a golfer is going to miss the cut, that's a great way to fade him as well. I think one of the matchups I saw was Daniel Berger and Jordan Spieth. If you think Berger might miss the cut this week, good way to do that would be to click the under there. So that is the Monkey Knife Fight prop of the week, Ben. And let's transition and talk right about the Byron Nelson this week. It's being played at TBC Craig Ranch. An interesting name there, right? I believe that's the name. Yeah. That's the name, yeah. Who knows what that exactly means. But it is in the TPC network. It's owned by Club Corp, believe it or not. I don't know if anybody is a member of any of those Club Corps. I was a couple of years ago. Regardless, it's just a big chain that owns a bunch of golf companies or golf courses. But they've longed the golf course. Now, we did see some type of competition here, Ben, in like 2012 and some Korn Ferry Tour qualifiers and all that jazz. And Sam Burns put up 25 birdies that week. So that's why we expected probably to play a little easy. Now, we've got 156 players here as well. Top 65 and ties are making the cut. Ryan Palmer, he's a Texas guy, as we know. He was on an interview and talked about the course a little bit, said that it's going to be bomber heavy. It's pretty wide open fairways. So I ask you, we've had this tournament at Trinity Forest the last couple of years. Kind of sounds like it's the same thing almost. I mean, I know Trinity Forest doesn't have any trees. This one will have some trees, but seems like wide open fairways, bomber heavy is what we've gotten this at this event the last couple of years.
Yeah, so we didn't see, mercifully, we didn't see Trinity Forest last year.
Thank goodness.
That course with the clown nose hole in one hole. But that's neither here nor there. Aaron Wise, former
load up Corey Connors.
Yeah, just get that course out of here. But it does seem like a lot of similarities in the sense that, you know, of course you can get in trouble. There are some trees and whatnot, but for the most part, you can be aggressive here. It's probably going to come down to the putter. When you need to make this many, hitting crisp iron shots are great, but you need to convert. You can't just lag it up there and gain strokes on the field. Obviously, the par fives, you're going to need to make some eagles probably. They're gettable. It's a nice mix. I like courses that have a couple short par fours, some long par fours, a good mix of holes, but I'm not sure and we'll see obviously a little more tomorrow. I don't expect a big win split or anything like that. I don't know how this course is going to stop these guys.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting. And there were a couple of tweets and mentions at the top of this week about when the PGA Tour goes to a new course. Typically, the scores are very good. Average score is around 70 for these new courses. And one of the reasons is the course wants to put on a good show. They want to be able to bring the top players back each and every year. That's how the event does well, of course. And if you give them the toughest test in golf, a lot of people just won't want to play because it's not a major. They don't want to come in and worry themselves with having to grind over every single shot and worry about missing fairways and greens because the rough is 6 inches long. It's only about 2.5 inches. So I do expect that trend to kind of continue here this week, Ben. Now, as we transition into talking about the players, we talk about some of the favorites here. It was six golfers again, but Dustin Johnson jumping off of a yacht last week seemed to hurt his knee. I don't know if the two are related, but the statement we got clearly from his agency was that his knee is flaring up this week and he's going to choose to sail away instead of play.
You know, it's tough because it's the week, you know, you mentioned the setup of the course. It's a double incentive because they're not going to force guys to grind it out the week before a major. Like, and DJ, you know, I'm sure, I have no idea, but I venture to say if this was Kiwa Island this week that he would be playing. I think that's a pretty fair statement to make even without knowing the facts. So probably erring on the side of caution and, you know, we'll see him next week. But I was a little surprised. Yeah, I know there's a lot of guys with Texas roots, but this is a pretty good field for the week before a major.
Yeah, and I think it's really top heavy. I think what we're finding is 36 players will be heading to the PGA Championship next week that are here playing this week. And I think it's really top heavy. I think you're finding a couple of more guys, say, seeing what Dustin Johnson did at the Houston Open back in November and carry that over into the Masters for a win. So Jordan Spieth win the Valero, of course, and then come top five at the Masters the next week. I think a couple of more players are using the opportunity to tune up their games or catch form. For the example of John Rahm, who will be the next golfer we talk about, we're looking for a little bit of catch a form. The guy missed his first cut since the Charles Schwab Challenge, which I think is this event. I don't even know at this point. It's not this event, but it's another Texas event. First time in over a year. So let's talk about John Rahm first, Ben. What did you make of the missed cut last week? And of course you, I know I was on him. I'm sure you were on him. Yeah. Is that just not the golf course for him?
You know, that would be, I don't think disappointing is the right word. If that's true, I'm not ready to say that yet. I think Wells Fargo Quail Hollow is a good course for him. I know him and Rory aren't the same, but they've got some similarities and you know what? The data wasn't that bad. He gained 2.5 strokes off the tee. He was slightly a positive with the irons. He couldn't chip and he couldn't putt and he got himself into some serious trouble and he was unable to make putts. He was pretty close to slipping in, you know, midway through Friday, I was pretty confident he was still going to make the cut. And as Bryson showed, when you're a world-class player and you make the cut on the number, Xander does this literally every week. No one notices. You just come in like sixth, but, and then no one pays attention. So Rahm got clipped. It's definitely an outlier for me. I expect a much better performance here, but even having said that, I was very surprised that he didn't play better last week.
Not only did he get clipped, but he had a couple of chances late in the round to stay or get it to that two over point. In fact, at one point in the round, he was one over, four under through for the day and just couldn't put it back together. He obviously wanted to make that cut. He had the longest made cut streak on the PGA Tour at 22 straight. You know, something that these guys actually do care a little bit about. No one will obviously ever eclipse the Tiger mark, but still it's something they do care about. I think the lead now goes to, believe it or not, Joaquin Niemann at 18 straight made cuts, which is pretty impressive there. Okay. Let's move on to a couple more golfers in this range. We talked about Rahm. Now 11,200 for Bryson DeChambeau this week, and we don't have to worry about private planes. Next week, I think most of us are excited to see how impressive the driver is going to be, given the fact that it's 7,900 yards put out this morning by a buddy downloaded PGA Championship app a little early, Chris Murphy. I've been talking to him for a couple of years now. I think he got married on the same day as me, so definitely got to remember him as my buddy. Now, he downloaded and put out 7,900 yards for Kiwa Island next week. Not this week, though. So does that mean we wait to play Bryson, or are we going to get a Bryson win?
So I do think that Bryson, obviously now, and he's shown he's a U.S. Open winner. He can do anything that he wants. But originally, when we saw Bryson kind of start to break through, what was he breaking through at? The John Deere, the Rocket Mortgage. Some of these tournaments where he can really just go to work. And I think the allure of Bryson is that he's a good putter in addition to the monster driving. Even last week, he gained 7 strokes putting. In addition to gaining 4 strokes off the tee. So he is built, you're talking about eagle props and over a monkey knife, but he is built to have, you know, 27 birdies and a couple eagles. And then can he avoid the trouble? We'll see. He just has that gear. So I do think that he is always in play at these easy type of courses.
He definitely is. No doubt about it. And I think that anytime we get a real driver heavy oriented golf course, like we got with Wingfoot, Bryson has to be in the conversation. Now this week, we don't have to worry about private planes and the show that Bryson DeChambeau puts on. And let me tell you, it was a talking point throughout the golfing world, not just in PGA DFS or anything like that. Everybody loved the show. I was playing in my Saturday morning game at my club and everybody was talking about it. So he puts on a great show, Ben. But at 11,200, do you want to be playing him in cash lineups, GPP lineups? Don't matter. Or are you just going to try and find the win or the value elsewhere?
So cash doesn't, it's early. We'll see. But at first glance, I rarely pay all the way up in cash. I just think balanced because you're really trying to maximize 6 of 6. Win equity is important in some regard, but not ultimately. In tournaments, though, I think Bryson is fine. I think certainly Rahm is in all play. But right now, I don't know. I mean, you mentioned this, actually, I think it was in a tweet, and I agree with it, but I think it's an interesting point by you that this has a Euro feel, where you've got like some serious top-end, top-heavy, and then it's just like, all right, it's no rhyme or reason for what we're getting. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic. Of course, I want to play like Bryson and Rahm and these guys, and we haven't even talked about Spieth yet, but we're going to have to talk at the end of the show as we work down. What do we do if we want to do that?
Yeah, it's funny. Not only is it a Euro feel, but right when you get to the Euro players of this field is where the drop-off happens tremendously in the ownership. Just a coincidence there. Nothing more, nothing less. But these top 5 or 6 guys, Ben, they're going to get over 100% ownership, it looks like. Top 5 guys would take out Koepka. So let's talk about Spieth, kind of the bottom half of this. Obviously, the tee to green game is completely 180 from 360. No, not 360. Hopefully not 360. I guess we'll find out this week, right? It's at 180 from where it was a year ago. So now he's being priced up with the leaders again. You can't get real leverage anymore. You know, for a player that I could go 20% and get 3X, no problem, for the last 2.5 years, I can't go 20% and match the field anymore. So does he really warrant a 2X at this rate, as good as he's playing? Or is 40% for a 10-8 Jordan Spieth a little bit too much?
Yeah, so that's going to be a problem for me, and it has nothing to do with Spieth. It's just I'm not going to squeeze Rahm. I said I like Bryson. Yep. I don't really like Decky and Berger. We'll get there, but you know, that's not for me. So I'll have some room for Spieth. I'm not going to allocate a ton. I mean, what can you say? The game's in great shape. Yep. Irons have been fantastic. The putter's always good. Another guy that's built to go very low because he can make so many. I don't know. You know, he's different, obviously, in the sense that Rahm and Bryson could possibly overpower this course. Spieth would do it differently. But certainly, the birdie or better metrics and everything, I mean, they're up there. So that's fine. I guess the question is, you were able to hold on to Spieth, and obviously you took some lumps there, but you got the real leverage, as you mentioned, when he was very low owned. Now that, like Rory, those times are gone already. So do you really allocate, you know, upwards of half of your portfolio, or do you mix and match still?
Yeah, I think for me, given that he's now priced next to Bryson DeChambeau, in a field where I expect Bryson at, you know, on a driver heavy course, what have you, to probably be one of the best plays on the slate. Yeah, it makes it tougher. I don't think I'm going to go 40% Spieth unless I can get 40% DeChambeau and Rahm as well.
Yeah.
Because that would mean, okay, this is what I'm going for. That's my strategy this week. I can't pick a clear favorite out of those three. I've always struggled with that as favorites altogether, I think. So typically when I have this, I end up going heavy on three of the five, and I just put my money in three instead of one. And that kind of goes to show Hideki Matsuyama and Daniel Berger, for me, I'm out. Matsuyama, like Spieth, we haven't seen or heard from in a month, but we know that he traveled back to Japan. He had to quarantine there. Then he did the media tour. And for me, you gotta come in the top five at 10,300. And I'm not ready to go right back to Matsuyama after a career-defining win.
Neither am I. I'm a big Decky guy, as you know.
You are, yep.
First of all, and he's been, even when he was struggling, he's always been very good at dismantling par fives because it's long, great. But he's another one. He's going to have to make a lot of putts here because unless he goes super Decky with the irons, you have to make putts. Now, at the Masters, he made a lot of putts. I watched all of it, as most did, and he was making putts all over the place. I just don't typically think of him. When I thought of the height of Decky's powers, I don't think anyone would debate it was at Bridgestone, which was his last win before the Masters many, many years ago. And that's a dangerous course. That's more like what I think they'll see next week than this week. This is a this is a much easier version of Firestone and whatnot. And Decky just murdered with the irons and he made those putts. I think I want him in a lower scoring environment in the sense of harder scores, where 12 under is the winner, not 25 under.
Now, how about for Daniel Berger, the last guy up above 10 before we move on to the guys in the nine? Looks like he's going to come in as the third highest owned, probably right around Spieth. Now, Spieth is $700 more. So I think Berger ends up with more ownership because of that. Their form seems to be similar. I would probably give the edge to Spieth there. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Berger just hasn't had the upside form, missed the cut at the Masters. Yeah, he bounced back a little bit at RBC, but 10-1, I would rather play Brooks Koepka even for that matter.
I don't know what to do. I certainly like Berger more than I like Decky, but I like Spieth more than I like Berger. So I'm not sure where I'm going to get him. The problem with him for me is I think there's a pretty distinct disadvantage of starting with him over these guys. You're not getting a massive discount. You're getting 600 or 900. Yep. And he's a hard second man in. If I use him as my second man, and now I'm really crippled for my other four spots. So I don't know exactly what I want to do there. We haven't even talked about Brooks and Will Z and these guys. So I may have a little Berger that just because I do think he's got some talent, of course, but it's a weird, awkward price tag. And that's going to prevent me from probably getting massive leverage.
Now, we spent maybe 5 seconds before the show talking about Berger. And I said, you know, Ben, we're on the same page. We're going to fade Berger again, right? And you're pretty much like, yeah, I can get on board with that. So we did not talk any more beyond that. However, if you check out my top five fades video this week, that'll be coming out soon here on this YouTube channel. Make sure you like and subscribe, of course. So when it does come live, you'll see it. I just said the exact same thing in that video, Ben, that you said, which is, I'm not getting him in first. There's no way. I would much rather play any of the other guys. And a second guy, sure, if he's in as the second guy, it's going to be a very aggressive lineup. But at that point, I'm only going to do that maybe 5 to 10% of the time. That's the max ownership I'll get on Berger this week. It's a great call. So, all right, let's move on to the next guys. Before we do, of course, it's my time to tell you guys about the free premium tools and data that we offer today and every day. We give you a little sneak peek behind the curtain on some of the stuff we have that we offer for the Osmo Plus members. And for NBA, you're going to get the main slate ownership projections. Russell Westbrook will be 100% owned. MLB top pitchers. PGA, you're going to get our golfer rankings of the week. And NHL, the main slate top stacks. Of course, if you're looking for all of what we have to offer behind the curtain, become an Osmo Plus member. For that weekly pass, which is just $29.95, you're going to get full access to all the premium content and tools on our website, including player projections, ownership projections, premium Slack channel, lineup builder, and so much more. And of course, if you just want to join Ben and I, Jeff, and the rest of the PGA DFS team, including Eric and Alex and all the guys, well, just join us for $8.95 for the week. And of course, we got express packages starting at $2 and $3.95. And the PGA Championship next week, Ben, great time to come and join us. If you do join today, you're basically going to get almost all of next week's coverage, and it is going to be a big time. The biggest major, 156 players full field, so you will want all the analysis you can get. And plus, it's going to be at a great golf course. I can't wait. It's really exciting. But it's really exciting to talk about Brooks Koepka here again this week, 9,900, coming off the miscut at the Masters where he was clearly hurt. Are you ready to play him, or do you need to see him make a cut or even just walk normally?
Yeah, walking would be nice. there's always intrigue because it's Brooks and whatnot, but
when he's healthy, first and second in his last five events.
Been great. Like, there's no doubt he does everything I want. I do personally prefer him on Bermuda, but again, this guy can do it anywhere. There's no doubt.
Yep.
I just think you're taking on a little too much. I don't think he's going to be unpopular to the extent where he's going to be like 2% owned. And that would get me interested because I'd take a couple flyers and I'd be done. If he hovers around 10%, I desperately need that ownership. I need it for other players. I'm not going to mess around with Brooks. If Brooks comes out of nowhere the week before a major and wins, I kind of just have to live with it. So he is not going to be someone I'm too interested in.
I don't know of the events that this next golfer has played. I have faded him ever, maybe once. I think maybe I did at one of those island events after he came off a good start. But we had a runner-up at the Masters. We then got engaged. We went to RBC and didn't do that well. We missed the cut last week at Wells Fargo at an event where, you know, kind of like a U.S. Open major feel. He's supposed to be good at these. Talk about Will Zalatoris. Now, before I pass it back to you to talk about him, I want to tell you that he's been playing this golf course since he was 12, according to him today. Been playing it with Scottie Scheffler and competing since he was a little kid. So, as he said, I feel like I've been competing on it all my life. Is that set up for a first-time win because I'm fading him? Or is it time for maybe a little regression from a guy that has come virtually out of nowhere?
Yeah, I mean, so just to give – this will put it, the puzzle piece in for everyone. So I finally was just like, you know what, this guy, I'm going to start playing him. That at Wells Fargo. So naturally, that's what happened. Obviously, there's going to be some regression. I mean, everyone – is going to hit it, you know, Morikawa to an extent has hit, you know, these guys are great and he's very talented. So I'm going to moderately just kind of piece it together with him. I do think long-term, the off the tee, the approach, I still want to see exactly what this putter does. You know, he's shown the ability to do it. We've seen it, but all in all, I don't know if he's the greatest putter out there. And so I'm kind of indifferent to the play, to be honest. It's going to be pretty popular. I think moderately, not as popular as someone like Fitzy. So interesting range here. I'm pretty neutral on Will Z though.
Yeah, I just saw the ownership tag of 18%. And again, I guess it's just a point where he's a tough second golfer in the lineup for me right now, given that I just don't think he's in great form. I would rather play even going down to say Slamming Sammy Burns. I know he's coming off of a win, Ben, but that win's been in the making for quite some time, having gone into the weekend with the lead or in the top five other times this year. It's not like it came out of nowhere. And I don't know if that, you know, just because he gets a win, he stops playing good. Maybe. We've certainly seen it before. But I would suggest that maybe it's not going to be the same for Burns because he's been close all year.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. Now, he gained 9 strokes putting at Valspar, and he does that.
Which you need to do to win, yeah.
Notoriously better Bermuda putter, though. Scheffler is right there, who obviously is another guy. You're going to hear a lot about the Texans because we have no course history. Yeah. And I'm guilty of that to an extent, but I think Scheffler's built for this course. There's no doubt about it.
You too.
Then there's just Leishman, who I'll be honest, I really don't know what to do with. You know, him and Cam Smith looked fantastic at Zurich. Of course, they won the event. Good at the Masters, but it's still Leishman. He's one of the toughest ones to try to peg in a birdie fest.
He is, because he comes out last year, you and I, or at least me, you know, I'm like, oh, this guy's out of form. There's no way he's going to be able to put up 28 birdies or whatever he did. And then he does, and he goes out and wins. So I think because of the, you know, questionable nature of Leishman, it tends to not lead to chalkiness or higher ownership. So I don't mind plugging in 10%, especially in my GPP lineups. No doubt about it. Couple of other guys, Matthew Fitzpatrick, though, if you're looking for another low-owned guy, he's sandwiched in between Zalatoris and Scheffler, and that's the reason he's getting 5%. Now, again, we don't know about this course at all. We like to play Fitzpatrick on courses we think fit him. I don't know if this is it. Maybe it is. I would rather play Scottie Scheffler, though, and it seems like most everybody else would as well.
Yeah, I'm interested. Obviously, our ownership right now is in certainly the preliminary. It's going to update. Right now, just to give you an update, we actually have Fitzy rising in popularity. A lot more than I anticipate that he will be. So we'll keep an eye on that. I prefer Scheffler. I like Fitzy, and I do think he's going to be built When he gets going on bent, no doubt about it. He can handle par fives, even though he doesn't, you know, his long irons are more than enough to get him there. And he's an unbelievable putter. So I get it. But if he is truly like extremely popular, I'm not going to be able to get over that number.
Yeah, maybe I need to take it back a little bit here. I'm sorry. I'm just seeing the latest update, updated 25 minutes ago. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate that. It looks like the initial projection on Fitzpatrick, like maybe I just mentioned there, was a little off, and Alex had updated that. Certainly still some other golfers that will be look to fading nonetheless. Now, a couple more in this range, Ben, in this 9K range. You mentioned Leishman, of course. How about Ryan Palmer, a guy that has said he's played the course maybe a dozen times, maybe more? Do you think playing the golf course a dozen or more times would give him a leg up on, say, Sergio Garcia, who actually also lives in Dallas and could have also played it a dozen times as well? But let's just take out Sergio Garcia lives in Spain still and is coming over here for the first time to play it. $100 separating them, both pretty good form. Would the 12 times Ryan Palmer has played it make him make you click his name over Sergio?
So I think the interesting question to that, the answer to me would be yes, but I think you have to keep in mind the answer for everyone else is also yes. So you're weighing not just would you rather have the guy, would you rather have the guy at the influx of ownership that that's going to cause? And I think that's the tough thing with a guy like Ryan Palmer. It definitely helps. I don't have to be a golfer to understand that knowing where and not to miss and knowing what holes that you can really attack is a benefit over guys who maybe have only seen this course never a couple of times. But if you're artificially inflated because of that, it can be a detriment. So what I did, I have no problem with Ryan Palmer. My contenders video with Josh will be out soon. Ryan Palmer's in there at 40-1 to win the tournament. I don't mind a bet on him at that number. But I do think that, to your point, a lot of people are going to see that and click him in solely because he has played this course a lot.
And like I just mentioned, unless Sergio gets into the interview room or gets interviewed this week,
we'll never know.
We'll never know if he's played it or not. We do know that obviously Sergio moved to Dallas a couple of years ago. So maybe he has gone out to play it, given the fact that. Now let's talk about Sergio outside of the course history, outside of Ryan Palmer. I actually like him quite a bit this week, coming in under 10% owned. We know he's been superb tee to green on an easier golf course. We just got to hope that he's putting with his eyes closed this week.
Simple as this. Sergio's, you know, he's going to give you the opportunities. There's no doubt. It's just, you know, we struggled and I held on and I got paid off to an extent last week with Luke List. We've talked about this. Luke List was giving me opportunities for weeks and he was missing the cut. And then finally, started to convert last week, boom, hits a top 10. Sergio's like that too. I remember when he was in the midst of his extreme struggles, he was basically unplayable. He was missing cuts all over the place. Boom, wins Sanderson Farms. So it can flip that fast.
Speaking of flipping that fast, one guy that I won't be flipping very fast into my lineups as I move down the price section, $100, we find Jason Day sitting there. Another missed cut at the Wells Fargo. The game looks completely out of form. There's no chance you're going to try to convince me to play him this week, are you?
I might. what? So this is like Ricky style. Jason Day.
Why is he 1,200 more than Ricky?
Well, that's a fair question.
Let's start there.
I don't like the price. But I'll just say, when Jason Day was at the height of his powers, he was the world's best putter, and he was the world's best short game player. It's all short game problems right now. Tee to green, he's gained in 6 straight events. Off the tee, he's gained in 7 straight events. I love everything I see with that. The guy can't putt anymore, and I don't know what to make of that. So for that, I'm just confused at what the problem is for a guy who is notoriously, I don't know if he was on Brad Faxton's list, but he probably should have been long-term. He's an unbelievable putter. If he gets that back, I think Jason Day could be a mega mind genius play, but I get why you'd be concerned, and I do think he is overpriced at almost 9,000.
That's my hangup. I think I said I was never going to play him again, and that's obviously a lie. I'm probably going to play him again at some point.
Probably this week, watch.
But it's not going to be this week, for sure. I see what you're saying. I'm looking at his stats from last week, and you know we lost 2 strokes putting in round 1. We lost we gained a half stroke in round 2. I don't know. I just don't think he's there for an 8,900, man. I'd rather play Taylor Gooch, you know, at $1,000 less. as weird as that sounds, Jason Day is just completely out of form for me. And I'm on. The problem is here, and I had it marked to talk about this exact instance with Jason Day, or you can use John Rahm if you really want to. I hate to loop them together. But I said on this very show last week, hey, look, Rory McIlroy is 20-1 to win the tournament. We've seen at times with these stars that get out of form, like Justin Thomas earlier on in the year, same price. It's a good bet to bet them at that price. However, for me, I don't think I need to allocate $8,900 of my salary today on DraftKings because I don't think he's going to come in the top 20. And we need at least that. In fact, I don't think he's going to make the weekend. I hope he does. I like him as a golfer. I like him as a person. But for me, not this week. Probably not next week. And probably not the week after. However, Harris English is starting to pique my interest. Obviously, he's had a bit of a regression himself after the win at the Tournament of the Champions. But the form recently has gotten a little bit better. Do you like Harris English? I know you didn't play him before. But he's got that... You know, sometimes he gets hot with his approach and hot with the putter, which, of course, we like in a scoring event.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to buy a little here and there recently. The irons are pretty stalled. His putter's been great. It's been great for a while now. Yep. I certainly don't mind it. Again, kind of a neutral play. And when I'm trying to visualize my lineups, certainly like most of the guys we talked about above this range, and I like a lot of guys below this range, this could be where it's pretty dead for me. Sergio and Day are kind of interesting, but Siwoo, eh. English is fine. Peters is a wild man. I get it. He can really score, but I don't know if he warrants an $8,600 tag in a PGA event just yet. And I'm not going to play Lee Westwood. So I don't know what I'm going to do here. And then Luke List has got a huge bump up, and I get he played well, but that's a big price jump.
Yeah, let's talk about Peters and List together, because I think that they're quite similar players in what they do. I think you and I would both agree. We have seen more upside from Peters. I mean, come on, he was in the Ryder Cup, for goodness sakes. But this year, when Peters has decided to play, now he's got a new girl, so he's focusing on being a dad. When he's decided to tee it up, he hasn't come in anything worse than a tie for 41st, and that was in the first event of the year. Since then, nothing worse than T27. So when he decides to tee it up, he's playing fairly well, and at 8,600, 5%, I think I am going to play Peters. I know it's, you know, maybe a little overpriced, and I'm playing Peters over Day, but Peters, by and large, has definitely performed better than Jason Day. Now, granted, it's been in the weakest fields, but I'd rather see Jason Day go and make a top 10 in the weak field than miss a cut at the Masters like he did there before. So I am in on Thomas Peters. Now, same with Luke List. Do you want to play them both? Would you rather even save $100 more and go get Aaron Wise? Peters, yeah, so I have no List, problem. And Wise, I think, are like all in the same bucket for me this week.
I'd agree with that, too. And I may look to pair two of three, and because I think they correlate pretty well. Luke List is just, it's a massive, massive price jump. And you really look what happened. All that happened is he flipped the putter. He had been striking it very well at Valspar and Heritage and Valero, and he wasn't getting results because he had lost 5 strokes and 4 strokes. He gained 3 strokes putting at Wells Fargo, and he came in 6th. So I get it. Peters, yeah, I mean, and then Aaron Wise, who is a former champ of this event, which means nothing because it was at Trinity Forest, but he's shown if he can flip the putter, there's nothing that would stop him from going low at this type of an event.
I loved Wise last week. I thought he was showing signs. He gave me the top 10. Now $1,200 more expensive. But if the game stays intact, there's no reason that at this low 8K range, he's not a great second or third guy in the lineup. So, yep, I'm back in on Wise here this week, even with the price bump. However, I'm out on the next two tour veterans, Matt Kuchar and Charles Schwartzel, because I like the golfers priced right below them more this week. Are you in my camp, or are you going to try and convince me on the South African, who is definitely playing much better golf?
So if I had to convince you on one, it would be him. Kuchar, listen, he could get hot, but he's just not really doing it consistently. I don't like that. Charles, at least on the surge. I mean, he gained 10 strokes tee to green at Wells Fargo. He had a legit chance to make noise. He lost 3.5 strokes putting. Really crisp since he played with Louis.
At the Masters. I think it was the second round of the Masters where we really saw him turn a corner.
And maybe there is something there, so I could get that, but I see why you want to go to Keith Mitchell, who really had a chance last week. And obviously Champ, these guys can outscore their placement points. They can murder these par fives. I get why people are interested in them.
Let's talk about Keith Mitchell first, though. His best finishes on the PGA Tour, the win at the Honda Classic, really tough, long course. Arnold Palmer tied for third, really tough, long course. Now, granted, he came at the Players, which is more of a, you know, a target-oriented course, but it was in that midst of a really good stretch of golf for him, the best he's ever played. And then, of course, last week, the tie for third at Wells Fargo, a tough, difficult, long golf course. This is not a tough, difficult, long golf course. This is more towards the other side, or so we expect. So that leads me to go to Cameron Champ. Cameron Champ's best events are Sanderson Farms that he won, you know, 23 under. The tournament out in California, what is it, the Desert Classic? I don't know if that's the one he won, but it's one of those ones in the fall swing. So it wouldn't be the Desert. It would be the Safeway. I think that's the one he took down, if I'm not mistaken. Again, a 20-under type of event, scoring needed, driving distance needed, par five scoring needed.
Yeah,
Safeway. That signs Cameron Champ for me. So I'll click him. And plus, on the DraftKings side, betting side, I think he's like 85-1 right now. So may see an article coming out from all of us experts in the week later on, and he might be my one pick there. So of all the guys we just mentioned from 8,400 and below, throw in Luke List, who's the top pick for you right now? Probably second, maybe third guy in.
So I think when you look at everything there, I'm gonna go with Wise. I know I'm a sucker for him, but I really do think that this putter is coming along slowly and everything else checks out. So there's some names here. I think you need to be careful with these guys because a lot of them are dependent. They've either taken a jump up in form or they are just, you know, so reliant on one facet of the game and their short game is just horrendously bad. So mixing and matching, I think, is a good opportunity here. To tell you the truth, I'm not tied to any one of these guys in the lower eights.
Yeah, I think I'm probably a little bit more tied to Champ than you, but that tends to happen with me just because I see the scoring ability points, and that's where I go. So, all right, before we move on to the value section here, I want to tell you guys something about the industry that Ben and I love, and that is sharing in your successes. We got a message here in the chat not too long ago from our buddy Ryan, who said he won $400 off a $5 ticket in the Drive the Green last week. That's a pretty darn good score. And listen, we love to hear about those. That's one of the reasons why we do this. So if you do have some good successes, make sure you let Ben and I know. We want to hear about it. Of course, also you can add our Awesome Hall of Fame Twitter account at Awesome HOF there. And what you're going to do, you're actually going to get a chance to win some cool stuff. Ben, it looks like you can see it on the screen here. You're going to download the Osmo profile pic at osmo.com/avatar. Tweet your wins, as I just said, at Osmo HOF, and you're going to be eligible to win a free month of Osmo Plus Platinum. That's pretty good. So all you got to do is win, tweet us, and you'll have a chance to win. Ben, is there a length of time that goes on for?
It looks like a pretty small writing for me there. My eyes aren't that good.
Yeah, there's some terms and conditions. You can check it out on the site. But you know what? Like I said, it's a win on top of a win. You've had some great success. We love to see that. Get some credit, you know, tweet it out, have some fun. Certainly at us. We love to see the hard work paying off. I know there's some weeks where, you know, like last week was a perfect example. I thought some of the work we did was really good. I personally didn't connect with my lineups. I had a pretty good betting week. That's regardless. But when we went in Slack, there were some very positive results. And it's always nice to see that. It's kind of an extension. So tweet that out and you can get an opportunity to win that free month. We love to see it, and we certainly want to share in that success.
We sure do. So as we move down the list here this week, we've got still some good plays. I'll throw out a couple of names. Alex Norton, he's made 3 cuts in a row. Charles Howell, he's made 4 of 5 cuts. Taylor Gooch, similar to Charles Howell, made 4 of 5 cuts. So some pretty good made cut equity from those 7,900 guys, Ben. So any of the three pique your interest before me asking? And do any of the three pique your interest after me asking?
So Norin actually does. I've been playing him. It's been fine in the weekends. And I feel like he's slowly transitioning his game. I don't want to overreact, but Norin's making more bogeys and birdies, which is normally when I used to think about him, he was more of like a very conservative, grind it out, you know, win in brutal conditions. It hasn't been a problem with his scoring. He's just been having blow up holes more often than not at some of these events. I actually like that because in an event like this, I'm going to need all those scoring holes. I think he can take care of these par fives. If he can avoid the damage, and this course shouldn't be overly punishing, I think Noren could actually be a sneaky play this week.
Yeah, I think certainly he won't be too highly owned there. Taylor Gooch, ball striking numbers has been very good recently. Not going to lie, I was turned on to him by one of my buddies down under last week. Kind of said, hey, look into him a little bit more, and I did. And T26, nice bounce back. Didn't get my Venmo yet from him, Ben. Still waiting on that to come in. But any interest in Gooch this week?
Yeah, I mean, when you've got an electric approach game like he has, we've seen it time and time again. He's got the formula. I don't think the consistency warrants this price tag, to be honest. But you know what? In a field like this, you can get by and minimal opportunity cost. So certainly someone I'm going to take a look at. I think he does kind of what I want. He can get crazy hot. He's always a first-round leader bet that people look into. And it's that type of concept that you want to take to, what is this called, Craig Ranch? I'm never going to get used to saying that.
Yeah, TPC Craig Ranch. I don't know. I'm trying to throw the Texas swing on it with the, you know, Southern accent with the Craig, but I don't think I'm getting it right. Anyways, now, last guy I want to talk about, and I had a weird dream about this guy. I hate to bring up weird dreams, but Upper Deck announced that they were bringing out golf cards for the first time in 20 years yesterday. Pretty cool. I collected them back 20 years ago, and, you know, I'll get a little bit interested. But one of the things that they're coming out with is like some autograph, you know, there's all those special cards. And the guy that I pulled out of mine was Charles Howell III.
Yeesh.
I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign, Ben.
Tough scene.
It really, really is. Obviously, we're looking for anybody else other than Charles Howell III there. That's who I got. Wouldn't be surprised if that's who I end up with. However, I don't think he'll end up on too many lineups of mine, although the form is definitely better.
Form's all right. He has lost with the irons in three straight. You know, you can't play everyone. Charles Howell's just one of those guys. Unless something really catches my eye, whether it's the price or the form, kind of go by the wayside. And more often than not, it doesn't kill you. He's always cash viable because he makes a lot of cuts. But I'd rather have Noren. I'd rather have Gooch. Would I rather have Ricky? That is the question. I don't know if I could say I'd rather have Ricky. I don't know what to make of Ricky. I do think having an easier course helps him, but he's another one. If he can't putt, he has absolutely no chance.
Okay, I got a question for you, though. I was reading an article this morning, and our buddy Tokyo Swan just brought it up. Has he gotten the invitation for next week? Because he did not qualify.
He did.
On his own. He did get the special invitation?
That's my understanding, that they mercifully allowed him into the – I don't – you know, that – I thought that maybe would motivate him to just be like, okay, Ricky, like you're getting handouts now, do something. But
up 10 next week for him next week. Yeah, I can't wait to see him gain 35 strokes putting and come in the top 10 next week. This week, okay, last week, one under on the first day, actually got it to a couple under at one point. I'm like, oh, that's a nice carryover from the Valero. We're going to see two straight weeks of Ricky on the weekend. And then hit that back in on Friday. Oh, Jesus. I mean, I just don't understand because he used to be so good. Now everything is bad. The irons are bad. The putter is bad. He switched putters. It's awful. Off the tee still looks pretty good, though. Is that what's intriguing you enough to maybe give him 5% this week?
Yeah, I mean, there's still some things that you can point to. But even last week, like even on Thursday, he hits in the wall. Like he can't avoid that double, that cripple, double. Like there's always one hole for him.
Round turning a hole. Yeah.
He just can never solidify it. It felt like he played as good as he could play on Thursday and he was one under.
Yep.
Like that was a 5-under round and it never materialized. And that's what is scary. He has to make some putts. He was never that good with the ball striking, to be honest. Obviously he was better than this, but
I guess that's my question that I kind of want to bring up. I especially am not remiss in finding and playing golfers that are in a slump, right? We all know that, obviously. But does Ricky have the skills that, say, even Jordan Spieth had in his prior years to get out of this slump? That's what I'm concerned about, that Ricky just was never top echelon to get over a slump as quickly as even Jordan Spieth did. And Jordan Spieth went for 2.5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty simple. Ricky only has one out. there's no way that Ricky's gonna, like, Spieth, to his credit, he got out, he fixed his ball striking, and then the putter came back. Like, he had lulls and ebbs. Ricky only has one out. He needs to become a world-class putter again. If he doesn't, you're not going to see him doing much. And I'm a huge Ricky fan, but I don't see any other way he fixes it. I hope this week something can catch fire with that putter, but we've really seen time and time again that it's not happening right now.
If there's anything that we're going to try and draw off of, as you just mentioned, or we both mentioned, he gained a stroke, over a stroke off the tee in each of the two rounds last week. Again, if we're trying to draw off of anything, that's what we do it. Okay, a couple of other guys that we want to talk about in this range. Peter Uihlein, another top 10 on the Korn Ferry Tour last week. The guy is just playing good golf. I don't know, though. The one I want to talk about was Carlos Ortiz. He seemed to break out of a slump last week, then played his last 19 holes. I get this, Ben. 10 over par, including a double on Saturday on 18, followed by an 8 over 79 on Sunday. Gotta love it. But he's looks like people don't care about that. Looks like he's going to be about 14% owned. I liked him. I thought it would be a good spot for him to try and continue that form. But the ownership is kind of scaring me a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to get there at that type of ownership. And I don't really like this range as a whole. Uihlein's eh. He's priced up, though. A lot of these guys were good buys. I'd rather go to the lower sevens. You've got, like, Straka sitting down there. Some Euros have come over. John Catlin is here. That'll be very interesting. Johnny Vegas is here. Chat just asked about Tom Hoagie at 72. The missed cuts haven't been good, but the ball striking has. He's another one. If you think he can make some putts, I get it. It all comes down to the putter with these pure ball strikers.
Tom Hoagie, actually, first alternate this week. He'll be rooting for one of the 36 players that are already in the field this week to win. Because as long as somebody else outside of doesn't win, that is outside of those 36 golfers, he will be in the field next week. So pretty cool. I'm sure he'll want to do that. In fact, I think there's a couple more guys that are right on that cut line for the next week. And one of those is Wyndham Clark. He is the second alternate. So when he withdraws, which I'm sure we'll get, he'll end up getting to play. But for Clark, pretty decent week last week, all in all. I know he came in tied for 43rd, but when he loses strokes with the putter, we know he's going to lose it with the approach game. The fact that he made the cut and still put up a decent amount of points is encouraging. However, he has not performed like we would have wanted him to, or like we want him to, in these low scoring events or high scoring events, depending on which way you want to look at it. Of course, I don't see Wyndham Clark getting to 20 under. He just doesn't have the iron game for it for me.
It's tough. Yeah. I mean, he does have the off the tee putting combo, and that is an interesting one, but the irons have been pretty, pretty tough. JT Poston's in this bucket as well at times where it's really hard. Now, I will say people I'm sure are going to play Vincent Whaley, who is just a cut making machine. He's made right seven now, yeah. straight. I can't say anything bad about it. It's great to make cuts. I just have a trouble getting to a guy like this. The form is good, but the stats are all over the place. Mostly done it with the putter, not extreme, but I think I'd rather take flyers on like the Harry Higgses of the world, low percentage, high upside type plays. You only need one or two to be right to come out ahead.
Yeah, you sure do. And we have got a full slate of content, of course, coming up here. NHL Strategy Show is going to follow us in just about 7 or 8 minutes. We've got plenty of time. In fact, in those 7 or 8 minutes, I wouldn't be surprised if we get to talk about 25 more golfers, because that's just kind of how Ben and I do. Now, we might have to go rather quickly through them, but we're going to at least give you if we're going to play them or not. One of the ones that I do want to maybe spend 35 seconds on is Doug Gim. I love this guy. You know I do. I've gotten you to play him a little bit, but at 7,500 and 15% owned, it's just because he went to University of Texas, right? It's not like he's playing all that great. I know he can't, but trust me, I'm very aware. Maybe this is the week it solves.
Yeah, I mean, young guy, he's got talent. If Doug Gim played well here, I wouldn't be even remotely surprised, yep. But I do think he's over-owned. Going to have to lean the irons. I'll probably look for aggressive pivots, EVR, Ben Martin, Straka. You're getting a fraction of the ownership. And yes, Doug Gim is more likely to beat them, but he's not five times more likely to beat them. And that's some of the pivots that you're looking at. So this is a weird range, though. You've got Rosner there as well, which is very interesting. I don't think I'll get to him either, but I do think that's a name, certainly, that's warranted. I don't think it's an overprice. I just don't know if I'll have room.
Yeah, I think
we just have no clue about this Rosner guy really still. T15 back at the Grand Canaria for the Canary Island swing, then missed the cut at the Tenerife. So it's probably not in as good a form as he would like to be in coming into a major, but you know, I think he's a wild card at least. I would probably rather play Eric Van ruining my lineup if I'm going to go that route. That guy.
So would I though.
Yeah. I think this might be a decent goal. I don't know. We don't even know it's a decent course for him. The thing is that I think for me, I was spoiled by Van Ruyen's success over on the European tour, just putting up top tens like every other week. He's not as good of a player as that on the PGA tour. It's as simple as that. I'm not trying to knock the European tour at all. It's just that the results speak for themselves. He's more of a volatile player over here than he is over there. It's just as simple as that. Look at the stats. If you know, if you guys want to hate on me for that, I promise you, I like the European tour. I enjoy watching it. It's just that's how it is. Now, I like him this week. I think he's a good GPP play always. But I think Patton Kizzire is in that range. I think on a course where driving is going to be easy, that should mitigate his worst. And he's had a good year this year.
I have no problem with that. Elite putter, you mentioned. He's at times a winner on tour, ripped off a couple during a swing season not that long ago. Again, I think this is where you got to get into what are you trying to build? Are you building driver-heavy lineups with Johnny Vegas? Are you building putting lineups with Patton Kizzire? I'm not going to say Wesley Bryan, but the concept of that. And then are you working down? How low do you want to go? You've got the Roger Sloan. You've got Will Gordon in the sixes. There are names here that I think you can still get to for the cheapies.
Let's talk about Johnny Vegas for a second. He's a Houston guy, not Dallas. They're kind of far apart. You know, I can get to Miami, same amount of time that somebody could get from Houston to Dallas on. What's the deal with Vegas being 20% owned, or maybe not 20, but certainly much higher than I expected to see him? And, you know, I know that the 8 strokes gained off the tee last week looks good, but he can't just do that. He's got to do other things. Now, maybe that's the reason to play somebody at 7,100 this low, right? That he gained 8 strokes off the tee last week.
I do think that, yeah, people, you know, Johnny Vegas is aggressive. He makes a lot of birdies. I see why people are going there. But again, when you have no course history, I think this is an important point as we, you know, kind of wrap up here that I wanted to make. When you have no course history, every other stat gets overemphasized because people have nothing to talk about. And so guys from Texas, that's a huge talking point. Recent form, huge talking point. And some of the other things. So I think Johnny Vegas is getting artificially inflated in the ownership game because of that. It doesn't mean he's not going to play well, but keep in mind there is no course history, and that makes everything else that much more important.
It sure does. All right, we got deep dives. I have 5 names written down that I'm going to pass over to you, of course. But before we do, just want to let everybody know very quickly that we have a podcast network. And of course, if you're not able to watch your favorite Osmo shows on YouTube, almost all, including this one, of our Osmo YouTube shows are available through the Osmo Podcast Network. Got a podcast for every sport, and we're available on every major platform. So head on over to osmo.com/podcast. Check out the latest. Plus, you leave a 5-star review for one of our podcasts with your Twitter handle or your email address, and you'll be eligible to win a free week of Osmo Plus Platinum. One winner will be awarded every Friday, and reviews are eligible for up to a year. So all you got to do is once for the whole year, and you're good to go. Okay, so now the deep dives as we come under 60 seconds. Roger Sloan, he's the highest projected golfer by Osmo. A little peek behind the curtain there. Highest projected point total. Guy shot 7 under last week on Friday to make the cut after going 5 over. That was a great round. Unbelievable. Makes sense. Will Gordon, second week back from COVID. He ended on a birdie streak last week, so at least he has that going for him, if you will. And then you've got Bo Hogue. He's the one of the other two guys projected over 60 points. Cole Hammer. He's the Hammer Time, a good week at the Walker Cup. He's getting a start here this week. And Christopher Ventura typically does well on the easier tracks. So that was the name I threw out. Any deep dive names for you, or would you like to save that for tomorrow night's Live Before Lock?
Certainly tomorrow night. Me and Eric Lindquist will be diving in. We'll be talking lineup, construction, weather. Jason's around. Maybe hop in, chat with us, have some fun. For sure.
Maybe just stand by just in case we have a,
you never know what goes on.
Problem.
It's lawless. My thing here is when you dig this low, you're going to me naturally want high erratic players. That correlates more to guys that don't have a ton of history on tour. All the guys you just rattled off, all relatively young, not a ton of stats to go off of. I kind of like that. I'm going to say Lahiri and Troy Merritt are two guys I'm going to look into, bring to the show tomorrow. even maybe Tyler McCumber. So there are some names here. Not going to say I'm going to get to all of them, but you know what? That's the beauty of this tournament. A lot of options down low. Chat, if we didn't get to your guy tomorrow night, we absolutely will stop on in. We've got
Find us on Twitter or in our Slack chat if we don't get it there.
Look at this. Look at this. Trained professionals. Zach Porter got third in FanDuel, $5 single entry. That's what I'm talking about. Beautiful. Yes. Let's keep it rolling. Let's keep it rolling.
Okay, so tomorrow, 8 o'clock, right?
Yes, sir.
8 o'clock. Ben and Eric will take it down for the rest of the week. And next week, it's the PGA Championship. Of course, we'll come out with a full slate of content.
Yes.
Look on out for the weekly, what we're going to be giving you. Check that out over the weekend. It'll be out. Until next week, everybody, for the PGA Championship, good luck at the Byron Nelson. Take down the 200K, and we'll see you on the other side. Cheers, everybody.